Hi, this is Dori Greenspan, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. You're the bomb.
Hello, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Handsome Brook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. Want to get cracking? Of course you do. Visit handsomebrookfarm.com. All right, a little housekeeping. As you might have heard, Radio Cherry Bomb will be back on the road this year. We're hitting 12 different cities from Nantucket, Massachusetts to San Diego, California as part of our Food for Thought tour presented by Kerrygold. If you have a journey through food that you'd like to share with our audience, you can submit your idea for a talk. We'll be choosing the best ones and sharing them on a future podcast. Visit cherrybomb.com to find out more. The deadline for sending us your idea is Sunday, May 5th, so do not delay. This one is for all my sister sustainability nerds out there. The Food Waste Fair 2019 is happening in Brooklyn on May 23rd. I could not be more excited. The Cherry Bomb team and I will be there. If you are a New York City food lover or food service professional, come to this interactive experience and get connected with the resources and knowledge you need to get to zero food waste. That night, from 6 to 9 p.m., there's the Zero Food Waste Challenge, featuring Kirsten and Claire from Hunky Dory and other mindful New York City chefs. And guess who one of the judges is? None other than everybody's favorite, ready? Allison Roman. For tickets to the fair or the challenge, visit foodwastefair.nyc. Today, we are sitting down with the amazing Carla Hall. She has had a fascinating career that's taken her from accounting to modeling to Top Chef. It's been quite the ride, and she's here to tell us all about it. We will hear from Carla Hall right after this message from Handsome Brook Farm. Handsome Brook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Suzanne Vizethan is a mother hen. She's the chef and owner of Buttermilk Kitchen in Atlanta. Curious how Chef Suzanne makes her French toast with caramelized bananas? The ingredients include whole milk, ciabatta bread, and some Handsome Brook Farm eggs to make each slice as fluffy as can be. You can find Chef Suzanne's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on handsomebrookfarm.com. If you're looking for Handsome Brook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs, you can find them at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Here's my conversation with Carla Hall. There's only one place where we can start this interview.
Where's
you know
that?
Where that is. Oh. And that is Cleveland. You interviewed Michelle Obama as part of her I Am Becoming tour.
I did.
So I'm just going to hand it over to you.
And let me tell you, I feel like I manifested that event. I saw her in Brooklyn in December, and I'm like, I want to be one of the people who's on stage saying, I am becoming. That's it. You know, those 20 seconds.
And oh, right. Because just so I saw her in Boston. Mm-hmm. So people come on stage before Michelle does for the main interview and just talk a little bit. So
exactly.
You wanted to be one of those people.
I wanted to be one of those people. I said, I just want to get up there and say, I am becoming a woman who unapologetically speaks her mind. A woman who isn't afraid to change her mind. And a woman who grows her mind. And that's all I wanted to say, you know? And then I had it on my calendar. I was looking through all of the dates that she had in her tour. And I was like, okay, I'm going to let them know when I can come and what city. So I'm looking through the entire tour dates. And the only city that I could go to was Cleveland. And I wrote it on my calendar in December. And I put a question mark. And then I said to my assistant, I said, oh my gosh, it's almost March 16th. Did you reach out to Michelle Obama's team? She's like, oh, shoot, I didn't. She reaches out 2 hours later. They were asking me to host slash moderate. Now, I'm holding my phone and I'm like, wait, what? I respond within 2 minutes, all caps, absolutely, just in case, because my name wasn't in the text, just in case they didn't mean to send it to me. And I was going to let them deal with the awkwardness of reneging that request. So, and sure enough, they meant to text me, and I was on the docket to do this interview, and it was the only date that I could have done it. If they had asked me for any other date, I couldn't have done it.
That is remarkable. How does one plan for an interview with Michelle Obama?
So I had 2 weeks. I read the book. I listened to it on the audiobook.
Oh, I've only read it, but I bet it's great. She narrates
she
it, of course.
She narrates it, and it's fantastic. I was making notes. I had all these tabs in my book. And then when I was listening to it, I was making notes and writing questions. And after that, they don't give you anything, by the way. They give you nothing. They said, you know, figure out your own arc and send us the questions a week out. So I had a week to do all of this. And then I lived,
no breathed. Ground rules.
No ground rules.
Wow. People
no
send ground us rules. Ground rules for Radio Cherry Bomb.
No, really?
We got your entire list of ground rules. No, I'm kidding. Carla had no ground rules.
I don't even think to send ground rules. So I sent them, and there were two questions that were just iffy anyway. And they were like, okay, not those. I'm like, I get it. And I just went and did it. And I had my questions on white paper. So I cut and pasted them and put them on cards that matched my dress. And let me tell you what's the sweetest thing. So Rachel Ray sent me flowers to my hotel room, and she had done the interview in Detroit, and she's doing it again in another city. The most beautiful flowers, and the card said, Carla, you've got this, in big letters. I wish I was there with you. Have fun. And I took that little card and I pasted it onto one of my red cards, and that was the top card that I had when I went on stage with Michelle. And
I
just kept holding it, and I was like, thank you, Rachel. And seriously, it was just the greatest moment. And I was really, really nervous. But once I talked to her and I was just in the moment, and she said, you know what, Carla, your questions are so thoughtful. We're just going to have fun. And what that said to me was, you know what, wherever it goes, it goes. We're just going to be two women talking here. And so I asked her one question and I just let the conversation go. And I remember everything about it, because I was present. And I looked at my cards maybe once or twice, but really it was just about her. And she is so gracious, and her superpower is her empathy and her caring. And she takes care of you as the interviewer. She will not let you fail. She really takes care of you. And it was just amazing.
Yeah, she's remarkable. The Boston one was so emotional. From the moment you step out of your car, we parked to the car, and just you saw so many people walking to where the talk was, young women, older women, men and women, people taking pictures with the cardboard cutouts of yes. Michelle in the hallways. I mean, it was just, I started sobbing the second the music started playing and you knew she was finally coming on
yes.
stage.
Yeah. That. Oh, well, let me tell you. Not that it's a fun fact, but it's not even really a fact. It's a funny thing that happened. So just before, we're backstage and they're playing the movie about her life and everything. And I'm getting ready to go back out there because I introduced that little clip. And we're drinking water, and she has her little flask of water that says Becoming, and I have a box of water. And we're doing cheers. And I said, uh-oh, I'm drinking with Michelle Obama. And she had laughed. And whatever she laughed or however she laughed, I had just taken the water and I sprayed it on the former first lady. I sprayed her in her beautiful outfit. And I have never sprayed anybody. And I'm trying not to use the word spit, but I'm just giving it a better name.
Oh, my God.
And I
did
said,
a spit take on the first lady.
Oh my, basically. Right?
Yeah.
And then, so there's somebody out there saying, I am becoming. And I just looked at her wet. I mean, seriously, I was like, what do I do here?
Oh, my God. And I saw from social media your mom and your sister were with you. That's special.
It was so special. I'm so glad that they could come. And you know, the interesting thing about that, whenever I'm talking or doing events, I'm so used to going by myself because people can't disrupt their lives to come with me, especially if it means travel. And so I don't know why I didn't think that they would want to come. And so I said to my mother, do you know anybody in Cleveland who wants to go see the First Lady? I'm interviewing her. She was like, well, I would like to go. I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to get your ticket right now. And then 3 days later, 3 days before the event, my sister says, do you still have a ticket? I would like to go. I'm like, really? But my sister is a teacher. So for her to come means she has to get a substitute. She has to do all of these other things. And I was like, okay. And that was amazing. And after the event, and my sister busts in the dressing room, and she comes in and she's like, oh my God, Carly, you did so well. I'm so proud of you. And she hugged me. And that just took my breath away and almost made me cry, because my sister is not that person. My mother's that person, but my sister isn't that person. And I realized how I do need my own people there when I do things. And so that was even more special. And just to realize that sometimes we forget, and we're so busy just doing it and getting it done and being strong that we forget that we need our support. You know, our support system there just to hug us and just to be there for us. And I'm not Carla, the person on television. I'm Carla, the sister, or Carla, the daughter, or Carla, the wife. And so that was special.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Something you said earlier about what you are becoming, and you said a woman who grows her mind. I feel like that sort of a central theme of the book and the tour, mm-hmm. about how you're always growing, you're always changing, and growing your mind is sort of that.
Yes. You know, when I did Top Chef, I sort of became comfortable with being uncomfortable. And throughout my life, I've had these challenges, and I just look at them as a challenge to help me get to the next space. And I'm like, okay, I know this is hard. And sometimes I have to just stop, feel it, and say, okay, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to move through this. And I'm better for it. And I know I'm better for it, just whatever comes to me. And I don't play it safe. And when you don't play it safe, and I've said to people, you're not going to be great if you want to be safe. You're not going to get to the place where you are actually making a difference in this world and you are doing the thing that you were meant to do, because you have to grow to that place. So my 6-word novel is Say Yes, Adventure Follows, Then Growth.
Love. So what are you here to do?
You know, when I got the chew, and that was so unexpected.
That was 2011?
That was 2011, yes. I was like, oh my God, why would I be on this show? I don't know how to host. What? And then I said, my prayer is authenticity. My thing, I think, is to remind people that they should be themselves, because everybody else is taken. And you're meant to show up, fall, fail, be happy, joyous, if that is what you're feeling, not because that's what you think you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to pretend like you're smart. I mean, get the information and be smart. You're not supposed to pretend like it's funny. If it's not funny, freaking don't laugh. But the power comes from actually doing the thing that you really feel. And I think so often people forget to check in to see how they feel. And even with my hair going gray, I was like, this is who I am. You know, I don't have to look 30. I don't have to be that person because society has told me that women on television look better when they look young. And so every choice that I make is I check in. I'm like, who am I? Does this serve me? I never do an endorsement with any company that I wouldn't use my own money to pay for that thing. I mean, there's a lot of people coming to me and asking me to, oh, what about this alcohol? I'm like, I eat my alcohol and dishes. I don't drink. So I don't do that. And because at the end of the day, I'm going to say, I can tell you why I wanted to do that thing. I don't want to make up a reason like, oh my, I don't want to do that. And I will absolutely tell you, and I'd be very open and honest and confident why I chose to do whatever it is I did.
So I want to take it all the way back before Top Chef. I want to talk about your modeling career because, you know, I used to work in beauty and fashion and I'm like, I love anything, beauty and fashion and Paris.
Mm-hmm. I love Paris.
You got to work in Paris.
Yes.
So how did that all happen?
I was doing accounting. I had moved. I was working for Pricewaterhouse when it was a Big Eight in Tampa, Florida. And I had done the fashion shows at Howard University. They were big, you know, for homecoming and for the spring fashion show. And so when I went to Tampa, somebody came up to me and says, do you model? I said, well, I have in university. And so it became a way for me to meet other people in Tampa because I didn't know anybody. And after 2 years, I was working that job. I hated it. I was like, oh my God, I hated it. My grandmother had always said, it is your job to be happy, not to be rich. I'm like, cool, girl, because I'm going to leave this job. I'm going to quit. I have nothing in front of me. I met these girls who were going to Paris. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to do that. I paid off all my bills. And I had one telephone number of a girl who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, like 4 degrees of separation. And then I had 10 words of French. And I just went. And
What could you say in French back then?
Je n'ai pas français. I don't speak French. And then I went, when I got there, I was trying to order something at the patisserie and I said, "Un croissant du beurre, s'il vous plaît." The girl lady goes, and this was in late 80s. She says, un croissant du beurre. I'm like, oh, okay. Un croissant du beurre, s'il vous plaît. She's like, un croissant du beurre. And her mouth is turning down and she is just like really impatient. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna starve to death here in Paris. I'm never going to get anything to eat. At the time, I didn't eat ham, but I could say hamon. So I was getting a ham sandwich and I finally got that croissant. And so it was, and then I had to go through the whole thing of finding an agency, which is just like finding a job. They don't just take you on, you know? So, you know, I'm one of the skinny girls walking around in black with her hair all slicked back in a chignon.
With the portfolio. I was right. Studying there in 89. So I remember you girls.
Yes. I was one of them. I mean, I wasn't the one getting the job, but I was one of them walking around, you know, with a book.
But that must have been, I mean, looking back now, that must.
It was
must
amazing.
Be fun to look back on it, maybe at the time when you weren't getting the gigs.
I didn't care because it wasn't the thing that I wanted to do. I recognized that period as being the bridge between what I knew I didn't want to do and what I eventually wanted to do. And I had no expectations of it. You know, you couldn't tell me that I failed at modeling because I'm like, well, I don't want to do this anyway. I was an accountant. You know, I just don't want to do that. So I was good. I did that for 2 years. And then I left Paris and went to London. And it's actually in Paris where I started finding my joy and love of cooking, which I'd never cooked. I never cooked. So this woman, Elaine, from Memphis, used to do these big brunches with the models. So all the girls would be saying, oh, my mother does macaroni like this. And it was mostly Black Americans. So we were making macaroni and cheese. Well, they were macaroni and cheese and buffalo wings. And if they could find the turnip tops, they do turnip greens. So we were just sort of having an American feast in Paris. And they were talking about how they made macaroni and cheese or how their moms made macaroni and cheese. And I realized I had no idea. I'm like, how is it that I don't know that? I've been eating macaroni and cheese for 25 years. Why don't I know how to make it? And so I started buying cookbooks and I started cooking for the people who were allowing me to surf on their couches. And it was a way to say thank you. And I just kept doing it.
I remember reading that you said you did not learn to cook from your grandmother's, from your mother.
No, my mother doesn't cook. I mean, she makes hot water cornbread, but she really doesn't cook. She made 5 things.
So you really pieced this all together on your own.
I did.
You taught yourself how to cook in Paris.
I did.
I love that.
And then that was 5 years that I started cooking. And then I went to culinary school at 30.
So what were you doing in between?
I left. I started a lunch delivery service as a fluke. And when I say fluke, one of my friends who was in Paris at the same time, she had come back from Paris. I was living with my sister in D.C. And my sister was having a baby shower. And I was like, oh, hey, let me do the food. And she was like, wait, what? Do you cook? I'm like, yes, let me. I'm going to make some scones. You know, I'm going to do some chicken curry, which I had learned, the coronation chicken in London. So all of these little things that I'd picked up. I said, I'm going to make you some food. And people were actually surprised that I was volunteering. So I made her food and I told my friend Patrice, who couldn't come, I said, Patrice, I'm going to bring you some leftovers so you can taste my food. And she was like, great, because there's nothing to eat around here. So the next day, my brother-in-law had eaten the food. I'm like, wait, what? I know I'm staying with you and everything rent-free, but this is like an interview, my food here, giving it to my friend. So I made some stuff. I'm like, when am I going to put it in? I looked around. It was a picnic basket. I said, okay, I'm going to put all this stuff in a picnic basket. So I get to my friend's office and she introduces me. Hey, this is my friend Carla. She has a business. And I'm like, yes, I do. And they're like, what's the name? I said, the Lunch Basket. And they're, and then they, I gave out the food and they're like, when are you coming back? I said, tomorrow. I left there, went to the grocery store, got some stuff, made a bunch of things again. And every day I went door to door, hair salons, doctor's office, florist. And within a week, I had 7 clients. Within 2 weeks, I had 14. And I continued to do that for 5 years. And I worked every single day for 5 years.
I was going to say fake it till you make it.
But that's
it. You hustled.
I hustled. I mean, as a matter of fact, I was offended when somebody told me that I was a hustler. But I mean, it was actually now I understand that was a compliment.
Well, today it's a compliment.
Yeah.
Back 10 years ago, it was like not a scam compliment. Artist.
I know. Right. I was like, wait, no. And I had a mail truck I bought for $200.
No.
Yeah.
Did
I
paint it?
I didn't. I could barely even get the brakes working. But, you know, if you went down the hill, you had to start braking like at the top.
Oh, my God. And look at you now, Carla Hall.
I know.
How did Top Chef happen?
Somebody called me from... My name was submitted from Les Dames d'Escoffier by Catherine Newell Smith, and they were looking to get more women to apply. The day that I got the call from Magical Elves, my sous chef at my catering company said, I had a dream last night, you were on Top Chef. So when I got that call, I had that message on my phone. I was like, oh, you're not punking me. Mm-mm. You're not punking me. And I didn't return the call until the next day. So because I was like, seriously? But then I looked at the number. I was like, oh, wait, I think this is an LA number. So I sort of, it was just a fluke. And I didn't know Catherine Newell Smith had given my name. And I went back to her. I've never asked her for any referral or anything or a reference. I went to her. I said, will you do a reference for me? She said, of course, silly. I gave them your name. I'm like, really? I mean, I literally went to her on a whim. And so it was a couple of different interviews like that. And I had my second interview. My first interview, I was at the CIA. And I just did my little interview. I went back to the train station to come back to the city.
Culinary Institute of America.
Yes, thank you for that. It was 20 minutes from being on the train. I looked at my phone. I'm like, oh, I have a message. Now, I'd been at the train station for about an hour waiting to leave. And I said, oh, let me check my messages. And it was, hi, Carla. This is so-and-so calling from Magical Elves. Can you come back to get a second interview? I was 20 minutes from getting on the train.
They wanted you to come back?
Yeah,
you
that
had left
day.
To go to the train and you had to go back. Wow.
Right? If I hadn't have listened to my messages, I mean, these days I don't listen to them. But back then, I you know, I'm like, wait, stop the train. What? So I went back. It was crazy. There were so many little moments that say, this is where you're supposed to be. And that's how my life, that is my life. I'm telling you, I believe in that. I exercise that muscle of listening and saying to the universe, please be here when I'm not sure which way to turn and give me a sign. And it happens throughout my life. I met my husband on Match.com. The first day that I went on, he picked me up. I was on there for a week, done. We were married 9 months later. I mean, ticky boo, because, you know, I don't have time for that. Yes.
Oh, my God. Have you written a book about your life lessons yet?
No, that's my next
write
book.
That. Good.
I'm
good.
Doing a memoir. My next book is a memoir.
I feel like the world needs that. Too much. So what is it like to audition for Top Chef?
When you go in the room, so you have this big 25-page application where they ask you everything but the kitchen sink, but, you know, can we have your firstborn, all that stuff, right? And then you have to do a video. So when I did my video, I'm like, let me have fun with this. I started it like, this is a day in the life of Carla Hall. I got up, it was dark outside. I said, we're gonna go run around together. And my next shot, I was down on the mall, literally running. What, you didn't think we're really gonna run? We're running. And I was doing like speeding it up and running down on the mall in Washington, D.C. And then I went to my catering company, I made something. And then at the end of the video, I'm playing Yahtzee, because this is my life, and I am rolling the dice, and I rolled a Yahtzee, and that all that was on tape. I'm like, Yahtzee? What? You know? So, and then I submitted that video, and then so you do all of that, and they had me come in, and then when you go in front of all of the decision makers, Andy Cohen was there. There are a bunch of people there, and there are about eight people in this one little chair. And then they were talking about watching Top Chef and your experiences of watching Top Chef. Well, I didn't really know about the show, so I had just binged all of the episodes, because you know how they play all of the episodes before they start a new season. So I just watched them all, and I was like, oh, this is a cool show. So everything was really fresh, you know, and I remember this moment where Richard Blaise and Dale Taldy, they were at an improv house, and they were doing this food moment, and I got really excited because I'm like, oh my god, and they tried this, that was amazing, and I was all into it because I just watched it. So I think my excitement probably got me cast it.
So you did not win.
I didn't win
season of Top Chef, but I would argue you won.
I think so. I think Richard Blaise always reminds me of that. Hey Richard, thank you. People are still upset by that, because when they rewatch, they're like, you should have won. And I remind them, if I had won, I wouldn't have done All Stars. It was an amazing experience, and I'm so grateful for that franchise. I really am. It was tough. But the thing was, when I was doing it, I'm like, I only have to think about one dish at a time. You know, really, I am, you know, when you're catering and you have your own business and you have the phone and you're stirring a pot with your foot and you're doing all these other things, and, you know, but on Top Chef, really, it's one dish. But there was a moment.
Sounds like going to a spa.
Right. You know?
For someone who runs a catering company.
And no telephones. I'm like, I have to give you my phone. Okay. What up? Because there are no phones. There are no computers. There's no newspapers, none of that. And you're sequestered. And for me, I was like, wait into exhale. It was amazing. But there was one defining moment when I was on Top Chef, and it was for Restaurant Wars, and I thought I was going to go home. Oh my gosh, my meal, my dessert was a mess. The ovens were off. I put in peppermint extract instead of vanilla and this chocolate cake. It was just a mess. But I'm standing up there and I'm really nervous. And then my heart is beating. And all of a sudden, I realized, nobody has ever died up here. Nobody has fallen out and died. And that is the ultimate worst thing. So I just calmed down. And then I didn't go home. And so after that, I was free to do whatever I needed to do. And that's another thing. I think, you know, it's hard because you're in your head. And that was a life lesson for me. So it's just like, feel it, move through it, and go to the next thing.
It's interesting when you think of that concept that you didn't win, but you won.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you've talked a lot about that in life, that even though something doesn't happen or turn out the way you expect, it's not the end.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that goes back to Michelle.
Yes.
Like that you're not one thing throughout your life.
Right.
There's so many things.
Michelle talks about this swerve moment, you know, when you swerve and there's, you know, you're on this path and you swerve to another path. And my entire life in the words of Michelle Obama, I've been swerving. And if it wasn't for those swerves, I wouldn't be here. I really wouldn't. So yeah, yay.
Let's talk about last year. Last year was a tough year
yes.
for you
yeah.
in a few different ways. Mm-hmm. Some good things, mm-hmm. but some definitely tough things. The Chew came to an end.
Yes. The Chew came to an end. I loved that show. I really did. It was surprising. It was fast. It was swift. We had two more weeks. Once we found out, we had two more weeks to tape. And we were like, you know, we're going to get the effets. We can be snarky. Everybody, all the fears that you had about not being picked up, you're not picked up. So what are you going to do? Have fun. And we had the best time. interestingly enough, when we were told, two things came to mind. One, my husband had just quit his job 2 weeks before. So as we were being told by the head of ABC Daytime, it was the wrong time for a joke. But I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. Let me call my husband because he just quit his job. Maybe he can get it back. Okay, he didn't think it was funny. But I thought it was hilarious. And then the second thing that came to mind, in season two, when I thought I was going to get fired, because it was such a learning curve that it was physical. It hurt. I would go home crying and my stomach was hurting. So I'm like, I don't know this. The learning curve was so steep. And I went to a psychic and I said, just tell me if I'm going to get fired, because I can't afford New York. So I needed to prepare financially to get the heck out of town. And he was like, no, that show is going to go for 5 more years. Season 7. That was the second thing that I remembered. And I was like, okay, universe, so what's next? And I did go through a period of sorrow, anger, a little bit of grief, but I also knew ultimately if the show didn't end, I wouldn't have left to go to my next space. Something would have had to have happened in order for me to leave it, because I loved it so much. And so that's how I look at this. And I said to the guys, I said, we will know within a year why the show ended. You know, and to have that hindsight sometimes is the best thing. But what that reading gave me was the will to look, to see, to be open, to go into with intention, to go into life like, okay, I don't know what's next, but let me be open. It's very similar to going into a grocery store saying, okay, I'm going to make something delicious, and you see the entire store, versus going in the grocery store saying, I'm going to make a lasagna. So you see more than just what those ingredients are for the lasagna. You see everything. You see the possibilities. And so since the end of May, that's what my life has been like. And I've had some amazing opportunities and some things that I would have never done because I wouldn't have had the time to do them.
So one of the other challenges of that year was your restaurant.
Yeah, the restaurant closed. The restaurant closed, and I was very open and upfront. That was hard. I'm still losing money on that restaurant.
Oh, but, my God, me too. It never ends.
Oh, my God. I don't even...
It never ends. Right? Carla, for those of you who listen to the show regularly, is now part of the former business owners of Brooklyn Club that we seem to be gathering on Radio Cherry Bomb. But it's tough, man.
It's tough. But let me tell you.
It builds character. Talk about Michelle Obama having empathy. I have so much empathy for people who own restaurants.
Yes.
And eateries and all.
It
any
isn't
manner
easy.
Of food business.
And I think when people ask me, oh, why are you going to open a new restaurant? And if you catch me on a bad day, and usually I'm pretty upbeat, but if I'm tired and I've gotten that question 3 times already, I have heard myself say to somebody, no, I'm not going to open a new restaurant, and I don't want to lose money for you. I mean, I'm like, Carla, what the heck? Why are you saying that to this poor little one? I said, and I'm like, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, it's hard.
I think it's the toughest business I've ever been in. And I've done a lot of things throughout my career now at this point.
Yeah.
The restaurant business is the toughest, hands down.
It's the toughest, but let me tell you, I learned so much about myself. Again, I know that every single experience is there for me. Every single experience that I have is there as a lesson for me. So I learned about what I am passionate about in terms of my food and Southern food. If I hadn't have done that restaurant, I wouldn't have had that cookbook about soul food. If I hadn't have done that restaurant, I wouldn't have these experiences about going into business with other people and what questions to ask. And, you know, and so it was great. And I share those lessons. And I think that a lot of times when you are a public figure, people don't share the real lessons about something, and they want to appear like everything is great and awesome, and you got here very easily. And so I shared those failures and the 6 things that I learned when my restaurant failed. And I talked about them at a conference for multi-unit food service operations, and then Eater picked it up and then shared it again. And other chefs have come up to me and said, thank you for sharing your story and being honest. And I'm like, I can't warn you because you have your own path, But I want you to know that it's not as easy as you think. Even for me, I'm on television, and you assume because I'm on television that it's going to be easier, that I can skip to the front of the line. I can't. You cannot do it in a restaurant. And there are lots of other things that you can't skip to the front of the line for, but that is definitely one. It will eat you and chew you up. And you, little girl, who want to open a restaurant because you like food, don't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is tough. We talk a lot on the show about how people finance their businesses.
Yes.
Because for women, that's often a challenge.
Yes.
You did a Kickstarter.
I did.
Why
a Kickstarter.
Did you go that route?
I did a Kickstarter, not necessarily to fund the business, but more as a marketing tool to let people know that I was doing it and to go on that ride with me. In hindsight, I probably wouldn't do it, or I wouldn't do it with that amount. I may have done it, let's say, oh, let's do $1,000. It wasn't my idea to do $200,000, which is not a lot of money for a restaurant, but people judged me for that. I think that we started the campaign way too early because we thought we would take people through this journey, because people don't know what it's like to open a restaurant, but all it created was frustration and anxiety and hate mail. So
yeah, I've kickstarted things that never came to fruition, but yours did.
Yes.
That was the frustrating part. You had a restaurant.
And we had 1,504 people to, and I don't want to use the word donate, to be a part of our Kickstarter campaign. And
your supporters.
The supporters. And I was so grateful. And the thing that kept me pushing were those people. And even though those people would say, oh my God, you have my $25. And they didn't realize how that meant, how much that meant to me. And so every day that I thought there was one delay after another, I looked at those names and I'm like, thank you to these people, even though I may not have been saying it to them. And then when we actually got funded, I cried. And it was because of those people and that community. I was so grateful. And if it didn't come across that way, you know, I really was, because I know for some people, $25 is a lot. Mm-hmm. And they chose to give it to us.
But it does go back to what you said. There's too much emphasis on, oh, everything is success. Everything is glossy and shiny and wonderful. And we don't talk about failure enough.
Yeah, that's why I like Dyson vacuum cleaners. I love those commercials. He failed, and then we had that great Dyson. I mean, I honestly get the vacuum cleaner because of the commercials. Because it reminds me, when I'm using it, this vacuum cleaner would not be as great if it hadn't been for the failures. And it is a mantra. Every time I'm vacuuming, I'm honestly remembering that failure breeds success.
Absolutely. Despite what happened with the restaurant, I feel like you put so much good stuff and good vibes out into the universe that you have repaid everybody back in that sense.
Oh, thank you.
We have so much to learn from you. It took us a long time to meet, but I'm really happy that we did. And I'm thrilled you're part of the Bomb Squad now.
Thank you so much. I love talking to you, Carrie, and I'm so glad that it worked out. And this was so wonderful. Jess, thank you very much.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Carla Hall for speaking with us. You are such an inspiration, and we are very happy to have you in the Bomb Squad. This interview was recorded at The Wing in Dumbo. Thank you to everybody at The Wing. Big kiss to Handsome Brook Farm pasture-raised organic eggs for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song, All Fired Up. The show is produced, edited, and engineered by Jess Zeidman. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Don't forget to rate and review our show. We love hearing your feedback and any suggestions for future guests. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hey, friends. I'm Becky Sue, the baker, blogger, and photographer behind the blog Baking the Goods. You want to know who I think is the bomb? My friend and fellow blogger, Lainey Schwartz from Life is But a Dish, where she shares easy and approachable recipes for the home cook. She works harder than anyone I know, and her love of cooking is truly inspiring.